The Gemara in the Masechta Matriya Daf Mem Hei Beis the Bottom is dealing with the machlokes between Amoraim as to whether or not a Kenyan Sudar can be done with a Matbeya. A Kenyan Khalif and Kenyan Sudar, of course, use those terms synonymously for today, interchangeably for today. The Gemara wants to know whether or not a Kenyan Sudar, which basically means you lift up a Sudar, which is like a handkerchief, and the object gets transferred. If I want to buy your cow, it's an edgeware, because in Hendon they would not have cows. Where I was making those little edgeware Hendon jokes before. Alright, no, I'm just kidding. So let's... In any event, let's just say, I want to buy your cows with a big schlep, so we can do this Kenyan Sudar maneuver. So you take my pencil, you take my handkerchief, you take my kippah, you take my shirt, you take this paper. However, what about a matbeah? What about a coin? So the Gemara says it's a machlokas between Amoraim. The Gemara now at the bottom of Memhei and Mebeis. If you look at the sheets you photocopy, two lines in the bottom, second to the bottom line, second to the end of the word, second word from the end, Mesa. The Gemara is going to try to bring a proof one way or the other. Mesvet, they asked Akashi, they attacked. Haya Omei Begorom. He was standing, a man was standing in a Garon. A Garon literally means a threshing floor. We'll translate it as a barn because we speak a much more simple English. You know, no longer are these days found English speakers. Ve'en biyado ma'os, and he had no money. There's a man in a barn with no money. We'll call him a farmer. All the clues seem to point in that direction. Amar lechaver, he says to the second person, right? The farmer says to his friend, "Hare peiros halalu nesunim lecha b'matana. I want to give you these fruits as a gift." V'chozer v'yomer, and then he says afterwards, "Hare hein b'chulalin al ma'os sheyesh li b'bayis. These fruits are going to be transferred onto the money in my house." Anyone know what he's talking about, by the way? Ma'aser Sheni, correct. This halacha. Background information about Ma'aser Sheni and the background information about this particular harama, which we'll talk about in a second. Basically, after a farmer gathers all his crop, the first thing he does is he's mafresh truma. You know what truma is? How much is he giving? How much is truma? No? What? Midaraisa, it's zero. Midarabana, it's a 40th, 50th, or 60th, depending on how stingy or generous the farmer is. So that's what he does with the first thing, it's called truma. After truma, he does what's called Ma'aser Rishon. Ma'aser Rishon, he gives to the Kohen, sorry, to the Levi, rather. Truma goes to the Kohen, Ma'aser goes to the Levi, and that is a tenth. And then some years, it's a seven-year cycle, you do what's called Ma'aser Sheni. There's a seven-year cycle, a seventh year of Shemitah. So six of those years, you do stuff. The third and the sixth, you do what's called Ma'aser Ani. 1, 2, 4, 5, you do what's called Ma'aser Sheni. Ma'aser Sheni means you take the fruit, and you bring them to Yerushalayim, and you eat them in Yerushalayim. Now, if you're a successful farmer, and you have a tremendous amount of fruit, so bringing some of those to Yerushalayim, or a lot of to Yerushalayim, is a tremendous hassle. So what the Gemara, the Torah allows you to do, is to be poded their Kedusha onto coins, take those coins to Yerushalayim, and buy food with those coins, and eat the food, and this way, all the food that you initially had to bring at Ma'aser Sheni, the Kedusha was transferred onto the coins, and that's essentially what this farmer is doing. Okay? Now he could transform the Kedusha. Transfer, rather. Pardon me. He could transfer the Kedusha from the fruit to his coin. However, if he does that, there's a penalty. You pay an extra chomesh, you pay a knas, you pay a little more money. So what he wants to do is called the harama. He wants to be poded the coins onto someone else's fruit, in which he would be saving himself the extra chomesh. You follow that? Because the din is, if you're poded the fruit onto your own money, you pay the chomesh. If you're poded the fruit onto somebody else's money, you don't pay the chomesh. You got that? Yeah. So far the story makes sense? This farmer was Tamakov. He knew the din of chomesh. makes sense. He's a farmer. He probably pays it every year. And instead of paying this chomesh, he wanted to, you know, minimize the payment, not pay this extra money. So he figured if he gives the fruit to somebody else, and he's posed the money from the still ma'aser sheni onto that from the kedusha, from the fruit onto the coin, this way he's saving himself a little bit of money and not having to pay that chomesh. So that's what the Gemara says. Again, just to repeat, Armel lechaver, the farmer says to his friend, "Hi, Paris, hello, Nusudim Luchab Matana." Again, the top of Membav. You take your fruits, which I just gave you, and put them on my money in my house. Taima. The Abiyad almost. The reason is presumably because he had no money of his own. Because Ha'im Yesh Biyad almost, then Litne Luhu Le'ida Mashicha Uparak. The Hachi Ada, the Havale Nach. Because he wants to save the Chomesh. Again, the chomesh you only pay if you own the money and if you own the fruits. However, if you only own one of the two, you don't pay the chomesh. So the Gemara concludes that it must be the farmer had no money with him, because if he would have had money, it would be less of a harama, less of a trick, less of a loophole. But if he's beating the system, it'd be minimized if he would give the friend the money. In other words, when the farmer gives the friend the payros, it's a big harama. When the farmer gives the friend the money, it'd be a smaller haram, or maybe no haram at all. And therefore, since the Gemara says the hachi adif, the havale nachri, the friend would be totally removed from it, that would have been better. However, he couldn't opt for this suggestion. He couldn't have been mapna the friend the money because he had no money with him. So far, you got the situation? Okay. Here's the part that's relevant for us. And if you can use a matbeya and be machne and nikne, use it for chalipin, so niknu lehu b'mos. So allow the farmer who has money in his house to be machne that money to the friend via kinyan chalipin. The fact that he didn't do it must indicate that what? No? So the in other words, why not be maxed the money over? Well, the question says, Lahek, how can you do it? Agav Sudr. Maybe you should do it with a Kenyan Sudr. So Balib broke the less lay Sudr. He has no Kenyan Sudr. And therefore, if he had no Kenyan Sudr, he could not have been maxed over the money. What I want to point out from this Gemara is that the Gemara is talking about a situation where they tried to do a Kenyan Chalipin. However, the guy has no Kenyan Sudr. The guy has no Sudr in order to be to create Chalos for the Kedusha. In order to trigger the Kenyan, he needed to have a Kenyan Sudr. That's basically the information you need to get out of this Gemara. There was a farmer once upon a time who tried to make a Kenyan with a Kenyan Sudr. However, he had no sudr on him, and therefore, you know, nothing goes. Again, a sudr could be anything, his shirt, his pants, anything. The Gemara actually rejects it. He says, what's this naked guy doing in a, you know, a threshing floor in a go-red? The Gemara says, too big of an akimtan. It's an interesting situation, because most akimtans, the Gemara has no problem how bizarre they are. The other Gemara thinks it's too bizarre of an akimtan. The Gemara actually rejects it for those reasons. In any event, the conclusion we want to draw out of the Gemara is a simple story of which a man could not do a Kenyan Sudr because he has no Sudr on him. Now there's a machlokas who showed him how to translate that phrase, the Lekalei Sudr. The machlokas, the Ritva versus Rabbeinu Peretz. The Ritva over here in Bab Metzia Daf Mem Vav says, Erish the Leka Sudr Klal. Va'afilu Musha. He couldn't even borrow a Sudr. The Hanu Daminan. Ichbal Kanalashmina and Gavra are Kiloi. In other words, Vishmamina, Shilu Havle Sidr Mushal Koninbo, Ukishem Shikonin Agav Karka Mushal, because that is again, that was the Kamel Sidr Vagav, Kari Aminas Vahaknosu, Behold the Have, Behold who saw, he beang the Pedro Mushal, the Dabra Zed. Basically, the Ritz points out that when the Gemara says that the farmer has no Sidr, and here's really the part where if you missed all the introduction information, that's okay, meaning it's important. Very important to know all that stuff with Torah and Gemara. But in terms of the relevance of the Shir, there's a machlokas shown him, which is basically the Ritva versus Rabbeinu Tam, the Ritva versus Rabbeinu Peretz. The Ritva writes, neither person had a Sudr, Neither the farmer nor the chavero, neither the farmer nor his friend, no one had a sudr. Because if anyone in the room would have had a sudr, he would have just borrowed the sudr and made a kinyan chalipin with that kinyan sudr. The Rabbeinu Peretz writes, the Talmid Rabbeinu Peretz writes, the less lay sudr, the ainu ratzalama she'ain lo sudr klav. Not like the Rishon says that no one had a sudr. El hachi perusha, the less lay sudr. Only the farmer had no sudr. El sha'ul, mikad mashma she'ain konin, b'sudr sha'ul. In other words, there's a machlokas Rishon if whether or not one can use a borrowed sudr to trigger a kinyan. So, for example, let's say I want to buy. No, you from Edgeware? Where you from? No, they don't have crowds over here. No, it's Edgeware. There's Edgeware comments made before. Okay, let's say I want to have Ben. Ben lives down in Boca. It's more likely to have cows there than, I don't know, than Montreal, the freeze. So let's say I go to Ben's house. And I want to buy Ben's cow. However, I'm here stuck in Eretz Yisrael. So I pick up this little sudr over here. Ben will lift up the sudr, and in exchange, I get Ben's cow. However, if I have no sudr, can Ben lend me his handkerchief? Ben walks around a little pocket hanky, you know what I'm about? The ones that you have to wash, they get pretty nasty. Ben hands me that Kenyan sudr. I say, thanks for it. I'm borrowing it. Ben, why don't you pick it up and lift it up? And he borrowed my Kenyan sudr, or let's say, I'm sorry, he made a Kenyan on my borrowed Kenyan sudr. Let's say I borrowed from Rose. I take Rose's sudr, I take Rose's handkerchief, and I give it to Ben. Ben makes a Kenyan. Does that work? Will that create a Kenyan Khalifa? Is the cow mine, or does the cow still remain in Ben's jurisdiction? The answer is, Machlokas Rishon. According to the Ritzvah, since you can use a Kenyan sudr that's mushal, you could use a borrowed Kenyan sudr. The Gemara must have been talking about a case where neither had a Kenyan sudr. According to the Beit Peretz, since you can use a Kenyan sudr if it's borrowed, I'm sorry, you cannot rather. Beit Peretz said you cannot use a Kenyan sudr if it's borrowed. It has to be your own Kenyan. It must be that only I had no kinyan. But at the end of the day, the upshot is, what you can draw out of this Gemara, and the interpretation of these two Rishonim, is that whether or not one can borrow a kinyan sudr to trigger a kinyan chalipin, and whether or not one can borrow a sudr, so the handkerchief, whether or not one can borrow a sudr to trigger a kinyan chalipin, is the machlokas of Rishonim. I'd like to analyze what's behind that machlokas. You have me up? Yeah? Understand? You know, yeah.
Well,
it says he had no Kenyan sudr, that the farmer had no Kenyan sudr, let's not the public. Everyone agrees the farmer has no Kenyan sudr. The question is, does anyone else in the threshold, does anyone else in the goer have a Kenyan sudr? For example, the chaver. If the chaver would have a Kenyan sudr, he'd be willing to lend it to the farmer. Therefore, the Ritzvah says it must be he didn't have one either. Of course, you can lend it. And the Beit Peretz says, it doesn't make a difference if you have it or not. Halachically, you can't borrow a sudr for purposes of a kinyan. You get the impression, the way they interpreted the Gemara was based upon what halachic position they took on whether or not you can borrow a kinyan sudr. And my question now becomes, what is the conceptual difference? What's behind this machlokas, the Ritzvah versus the Beit Peretz, which triggered them to think the halach is the way that they each independently thought, which is, and then again, triggered them to interpret the Gemara the way that they did. Whether or not one can borrow a sudr to make a kinyan is machlokas Rishonim. Why yes, why no, what's the svar for the Ritzvah, what's the svar for the Beit Peretz, why does the Beit Peretz say you can't borrow one, why does Ritzvah say you can borrow one? You got that so far? Got you with me?
Yeah.
Guys, how you doing? DJ, hold it? Yeah.
You say maybe it's been on lending. Don't say lending is gosh, giving them
kinyan. Good point. One machlokes, again, and there can be two variables you're going to want to analyze. Number one is, if you want, and just methodologically speaking, what is the halachic status of lending a sudr in order to make a kinyan chalipin? That machlokes is either going to depend upon the nature of of lending, of she'ela, of ishoel. How similar is she'ela to bailus? If I lend you something, is it really yours, just you have to give it back, or is it mine, you're just holding on to it? L'may nafkamina, again, in addition to our case, if that's our case, exactly. Maybe if, let's say, a person lends, if I lend etaveres, a bag full of pretzels, who violates the isra of bal yirah bal yimatzeh on Pesach? Right? If I lend it to him, is it mine, I own it? Or since he borrowed it, he may have enough responsibility, enough bailus on these pretzels, that he violates bal yirah bal yimatzeh. That may also be a question of what is the halachic definition of she'ela, what is the halachic understanding? Who is nichshav, the complete bal? Maybe this is exactly the same shaila over here. If she'ela means it's completely mine, then I can therefore go ahead and trigger the king. However, if she'ela means it's somebody else's, it's still his, or it's still Ben's, or it's Rose's, or whoever it belongs to, well then arguably what? The kinyan would not work. And we're getting the last one to suggest is that maybe this machlokus depends upon the nature of she'ela. And this shaila about she'ela comes up many, many times in Shas. Many Rishon seem to debate this particular point. Arguably, that's good for the machlokus made a parrot in the Rizva. If I wanted to know if it's true, I would love to go out and investigate, take a look at a bunch of more sheets of the Rizva all over Shas where she'ela becomes a relevant factor. We've been in Paris with the Kafka, big rapid sheet that we don't have this farm as much as we have the Ritvas. But it'd be a great, you know, way to do a little bit of research and figure out if it's a Ritva sheet in general, open up the third bracket, the eighth bracket, of the Kafka, and analyze whether or not this is really the Ritva sheet through and through. How does he perceive, how does he understand, from a halachic, you know, perspective, how does he understand what his shame is? That's option number one, having mad with my focus. And it could be it's true, it could be it's true. There's an alternative, there is an alternative. Mahalik. The second way which I'd like to try to develop, which is not necessarily about the nature of She'ela and how that operates, but rather what? What is Kinyan Khalifin? How does Kinyan Khalifin work? What is the Kinyan Khalifin? Why does it work? What are the mechanics of Kinyan Khalifin? What's the nature, the essence of Kinyan Khalifin? What's it all about? Potentially understanding the nature of Kinyan Khalifin may very well help us be masber this machlok to be in parents of the Rizva in a different way of what Lance wanted to suggest. What Lance said is great, it requires more research. What I'm about to say, I think is great also, it'll require more research. We'll have to figure out which is true. We'll look at the words. I don't think any of the words of them were indicative either way. And if the words are indicative either way, the next best thing to do is to check which is correct is to look around different cases in Shas. What would the Rizva hold in other particular cases where this hakir would come up, where these hakirs would come up? If we can figure it out, develop, if we know the answer. If not, we'll have to leave it as two possibilities. If the Shem has the may have yes, we'll go ask the Ritva what you have in mind, and the Pharisees have in mind, etc. So one of the most important machloksim, legabe this shaila, or legabe this din, is the machlokis Rav and Levi that comes up in the next half of us, the Adav Mevzayim Amrav. There they debate the following topic. Who does a Kinyan suitor need to belong to? Halakha might be asked it belongs to the Kona, not the Makhna. And that's what I'm operating with until now. I'm being Kona Ben's cow. He takes my suitor. And that's Halakha might. At the end of the day, that's how it works. If I want his cow, if I want his car, if I want his cow, if I want his cow, whatever it is, I give him my suitor and he gives me his object at home, cow, whatever it is. I may give him $100,000 along with it. It's a very expensive cow. Maybe more likely about $1,500. Now, I can't make a Kinyan on a cow of mine. Because Kesef only buys carbon, not metallic. I can buy Nisha, but not metallic. And therefore, if I want his cow, I'll do a Kinyan Khalifa, and I give him my suitor to get it. That is the Shita of Levi. Levi believes it's a flea shell comment. However, the Shita of Rav Levi is great, and Rav writes flea shell comment. Or in other words, if Ben wants to be Makhna be his cow, he'll give me his suder, and along with the suder, I get his cow. We don't pass it now, we pass it like lazy. But that was the Shita of Rav. Now the truth is, what's behind this machloket? What is Rav holding? How does Levi disagree? This may trigger. This machloket should strike at the heart of what is Kenyan Khalifa. You understand why? Whether you can use a borrowed object or not, may or may not somehow relate to what Khalifa is, that's the point that maybe not, but I'm going to suggest maybe yes. Who owns the Sudar is not a peripheral issue. It's very central. It's one of the most fundamental issues. How does it work? Who, if I'm getting his couch, do I give him the Sudar? Who did he give me the Sudar? Let's start with Shita's Rav. What is the Svara of Shita's Rav? Why would Rav believe? What conceptual understanding can one have of Shita's Rav that when Ben gives me his Sudar, along with it comes his cow, yeah? Some along those lines, I'm going to sharpen a little bit. Let's just take a step back and think about how most Kenyans work. If I want to buy 8 times there is a little walkman with a little red box around it. So basically, what has to happen? Abraham gives me this little wall man, or whatever the thing is, I buy. What do I give him? How does that make it mine? Now, if I would just take it, would that make it mine? Not really, that's cold. Now, if he would just want to give it to me, and I would just want to take it, but we never did anything, then what? That's all. Or in other words, the two fundamental, elementary components of a Kenyan are number one, a mutual haskama, an agreement. The fact that he wants it and I want it. And number two is some type of action that makes it mine. The standard Kenyan would be hadwat. I lift this thing up, we thought and what that's okay. We show it. Rashi tells the condition that's above. But at the end of the day, if I lift it up and go Kenyan hadwat, that shape becomes mine. If I would just do it without his permission, it would not. I'd just steal. And therefore, there are two parts to a kidney. There is the pe'ula, which is me taking it, that the meshicha sa'behema, the hagbas ha'chefet, whatever it is, maybe. And there's another part, which is the haskama, the da'at, our agreement. I think Rav believes that Kenyan Sudar is the... And I guess the question is, which one of those two things is really predominant? Is it the das or is it the action? The standard, I think, at least for Kenyan Sudar, the Chora Rav believes is that. Rav believes what really creates the Kalos, I think, is the das. Once Beret and I agree that once Ben and I agree that I want his cow, that's 90% of the Kenyan, however. Words alone are insufficing. Dvar, words, amira, alone, is not enough to create a kalosa Kenyan. Why not? Even in American law, English law, what you have to do is you want to make a Kenyan. Words alone, I think, don't do it. You have to give some money, you have to make a handshake, you have to do something. In addition to the das, there's some ta'ula which shows that we're serious with cold and lungs and gemira and das. But how do I know if the person really committed to give me this? How do I know that I really want to give my cow? It means just toying with the idea. At what point in time is it serious? The answer is when there's a ta'ula being symbolizing the fact that we're completely serious, that doesn't mean this is very passive. You follow? That's the thing we're Rav believing. Rav believes all we need is an agreement, but we need some way of showing that we're very serious. It could have been a handshake, it could have been signing a shtar, it could have been a lot of these different things. And some of these work in different areas. Handshake, they work in American law. Shtar works for car. That works for Talmud, and that's a separate question. But essentially, what we need is some type of pu'ula to show if they're serious. You know what pu'ula would show Ben is serious? The fact that he's willing to lift up his sudar They make a formal message. They can go ahead and show. It's a symbolic act showing that Ben's serious. By him showing he's serious, actively showing he's serious. Therefore, what? That makes the object mine. Who should be the one showing he's serious? Ben. Now the question is, what's his heart for them? Which of these two assumptions is Rav is lady reject? Number one is it's a Kenyan das, and number two, that I'll say differently. And number two is it's done by the Kohen. Assumption number one is that the Kenyan das, number two is the best way to express Ben's das is by what? Ben making the Kenyan. The best way for Ben to show that he's serious is what? For Ben to lift up the Siddur and show he's serious, make the Kenyan. Be mad, show the spirit of us. Well, if Levi wants to disagree, the Chara, there's one or two paths of Levi to disagree. Either Levi can say that the Kenyan Siddur is the Kenyan Halimi. It's not about that. The Pu'ula does it. The Pu'ula triggers the Kenyan. It doesn't just show the spirit of us. The Pu'ula is the Kenyan. In other words, it's a hachlap. It's an actual trait. It's not that the lifting of the sliver shows that Ben is serious, but rather what? It's actually a physical exchange. When I take, so when Ben takes my sliver, that creates a halachic transaction, that act causes my object to go to him and my object to come to him. My object, the sliver. What's his object? The cow. In other words, it's not that there's a Kenyan das and this is a random act that shows we're serious. This is a specific act designed at triggering something. For example, when I was making Kenyan Hagbah, I couldn't have a similar Hakira. Isn't that I'm just showing that it's mine? By lifting it up, I'm showing, I'm demonstrating, I'm illustrating, I'm demonstrating to the world that it's mine. Or is it the action of picking it up makes it mine? Is it that the action makes it mine, or the action just show something, whatever has to be seen? There's a suggestion over here. According to Levi, maybe one can argue, it's not a Kenyan das. It's a hachlof. It's a real trade. The physical act of Ben taking my sudur creates a halachic trade. That is a Kenyan halachic. Alternatively, one can argue, it still is what's called a Kenyan das. It still is the fact that Ben and I agree that his cow is coming to me. However, we do need a Maisa, but instead of the Kona doing the Maisa, it's the Matthew doing the Maisa. In other words, even though Ben would show he's serious, according to Rav, maybe according to Levi, Ben has to take my Siddur, opposed to me taking his. In other words, me taking his would show he's serious, but him taking mine would show that also that he's serious, less of an emphasis on him and more of an emphasis on the trade. In other words, I have two possibilities of what Levi holds, and each one of them is different from Rav. One of them is significantly different from Rav. That's the first possibility. Maybe option number one is a Machlokes Rav and Levi's. What is the goal of Siddur in the first place? Is it to show that we're still, isn't it about that's the Kenyan das? That fundamentally the agreement was just a small little technical act. Or is it an actual exchange? Alternatively, everyone can say, no, Rav and Levi both agree to Kenyan das. At the end of the day, everyone agrees Kenyan Khalifa is both, but all about the conceptual agreement, it's a cerebral thing. The fact that Ben and I agree, that's what's going on. Now the question is, who does the act to show we're serious? That's a smaller machlok. According to Rav, it's Bekelev Shel Kona. Ben takes my act to show he's the most serious. And according to Levi, I take Ben's act to show that it's that he's serious about the trade. It's reflective not only of his das, but of the particular trade, which is more symbolically correct. But according to the second Mahalik between Rav and Shmuel, fundamentally they're the same. If I were drawing it on the board, I would write a possibility like this. I would hear a sheet of Rav. The question is, does Levi fundamentally disagree like this, or does technically disagree like that? In any event, at the end of the day, we reject Shita's Rav, and we have two possibilities. What is the smart for Shita's Levi? What is going on in Levi's mind? Does Levi believe a Kenyan Khalifa is essentially a Kenyan Dasha of Kula? Just because mentally and verbally an agreement is suffice? Or alternatively, is it actually an exchange? Is it a physical exchange which causes a transition, a transaction halacha? And there are a couple nafkaminas to this shayla. You have some second cut here? What, last, you with me? You hear it? Freeman, you follow this? Yeah. You. At the end of the day, there's two possible svaras for Levi. There's a hakira, two different svaras, which is a hakira, for Shita's Levi. One is that Kenyan Khalifin, when I take Ben's cow, everyone, I'll let the other pass my place. When I take Ben's cow, he takes my sudr. Is Ben's taking of a sudr an act that is reflected, symbolic of the fact that he's serious? But it's the fact that he's serious that triggers the Kenyan? Is the fact that he and I agree that the cow will become mine? Is that what triggers the Kenyan? However, you can't just talk about it, you have to do an action. We chose a random act, a Kenyan. Alternatively, we can say no. It's not a random act, a Kenyan. It's a specifically designed to make the cow mine. When Ben takes my sudr, that's exactly what makes the cow mine. It's expressive of this exchange. If you like my hesber and rav or not, leave aside. If you like my two hesber and Levi, I think they're even better than my hesber and rav. But I definitely think that these two possibilities are legitimate possibilities. It's definitely a major hakir that the Achronim discuss as to how Kenyan sudr operate, what are its mechanisms, what's really going on in this kingdom. And one option is basically it's a two parts that we spoke about. Erez and I, with let me take his iPod. So is it the agreement slash verbalization, articulation, that what we want? Is it really that's driving the heart of the kingdom to use the action in order just to show we're serious? Or is the actual, what's fundamentally going on, and what makes the agreement that we have makes an act available? Which is really the issue, which is really the topic. Just a few quick napkins. I gotta move, I'm like running late over here. There's a machlokis, the Rambam and the Raibid, as to whether or not a Kenyan Sudr, this Kenyan Khalifin, needs Eidim or not. According to the Rambam, the Rambam writes in the Mechir Perakei Allah Hattas, there's no Kenyan in the world that needs Khalifin, not Kenyan Hagwa, not Kenyan Mashiach, not Kenyan Sudr, not Kenyan this, not Kenyan Agam Karka, all the Kenyan, none of them need Eidim. And the Raibid on the side of disagrees that it's incorrect, and further, it's not from Basha and Abdal, the Raibid writes, you do need Eidim. So the Mesh Machlokas, the Rav versus the Rambam. The Rambam believes you don't need Eidim, but Mishita Rabbeinu Tamas, that's the Kedushin as well. The Rav, both here in Bambas, for the Rashbam and others, that you do need Eidim. Or Eidim needed for Kenyan Sudr, for Kenyan Khalif, and the answer is, it's the Machlokas from Shavuot, it's the Machlokas from Benavan, Gufa Harshad. If it's the raw physical transaction that makes the object mine, then why would you need Eidim? All you need is the transaction. Just like by all other Kenyanim, you don't need Eidim, so come here, you wouldn't need Eidim. And that's exactly what the Rambam context is. Just like none of the Kenyanim needs, so do Kenyan Khalifa, it's a king like any other one. There isn't a physical transaction, physical exchange. That's lovely. However, according to the Raibid and the Rashbam and others, being that Kenyan is a Kenyan Das, I think that's the Chazanish's question, a Kenyan Das. Basically, it's a Kenyan that we agree that I wanted. However, we need some type of act to show that we're serious. Well, it could be the act is insuffice to show we're serious. You know what else you need? Eidim. Eidim create the chalos. Eidim create the gemuras da'at. Eidim show that we're serious, that we really mean. The act alone is insuffice to show we're serious. You need even more. That would only make sense if you believe that a Kenyan Khalifin is a Kenyan Das. There's a few other machlokes in other nafkaminas I had. I'm going to leave them to the side now because I want to get back to the Chazar in 2 minutes. So maybe this is the machlokes written versus the Rebbeinu Peretz as well. Maybe that's good for our machlokes. If I believe that a Kenyan Khalifin is an exchange, then you want to know what? For Ben to get my cow, what must I give him? My sudr, a sudr that belongs to me. However, if it's just an act, a symbolic act to show that we're serious, you want to know what? Who cares who the siddur belongs to originally? As long as I had Ben my siddur, and Ben shows that he's serious, that should be suffice. And therefore, the Ritva may argue that a Kenyan siddur would work if it's borrowed, because at the end of the day, the entire purpose, the whole goal of it is, if the Kenyan does to show we're serious, the act is such an irrelevant part of the Kenyan, it's peripheral, it's secondary, it can't even, it's so non-central, it's tangential, it's really just not an important part of the Kenyan. Your object, someone else's object, at the end of the day, as long as Ben lifted up the siddur to show we're serious, that's all we care about. However, if the exchange is what's not if the Kenyan Khalifa is defined by the fact it's an exchange, if it's the fact that when Ben takes my sudr, physically his Kenyan on my sudr, but makes his cow mine, well, it can't just be something borrowing temporarily. It's good for that physical action which triggers everything, and if it's not mine, well then very well likely the Kenyan would not be cow. Therefore, the machlokas, the Ritva, the Minhag Paris, might not necessarily be about the nature of she'ela, but rather about the nature of chalipa. May depend on the machlokas Rav and Levi. May depend on the machlokas Rav and Levi about Edim. There are several other nafkaminas in the she'ela again, but being that we're short on time, we'll leave them aside for now. Mirza Shem, in some other context, we have the ability to put it together, so we'll do so. All right.